This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is Inside Story with Lee Chui Lin. Following a week of confusion and traffic jams, we are now going to take a closer look at our tolls and highways. So first, is our current system serving us and what needs to change? And then, are there other long-distance options we should be looking at aside from highways? So the simple question is this. Tell us, how would you like to see our tolls improve? That number to call is 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:07. So if I may, let's go back to the start of this week, because many road users in the Klang Valley were caught in ginormous traffic jams at the North-South Highway, toll booths specifically. And this was kind of believed to be caused by problems with the RFID system. Now, road users who were using the NSC for work on Monday morning said that the congestion started at Bandar Sri Putra and the Sungai Besi toll booths as early as 7 a.m. And during the evening rush hour, the same highways also continued to have traffic congestion, many users being forced to reverse from their toll lanes. And as we all know, as highway users ourselves, once the reversing starts, it's a cascade. It's going to be a problem. Several drivers also complained that lanes at toll booths that were previously used for smart tags were missing and instead had been replaced with RFID lanes. As we know, we are trying to make this big transition over. And earlier, like we said, the NSC operators had said that they would be gradually switching to the RFID toll transaction system from January 15. But I mean, by the sounds of it, I don't think that perhaps the signage wasn't clear or, I just don't think that drivers were necessarily prepared. So after all of this, yesterday, the Prime Minister, Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri Yaakob, said that road users have to be given the option of using either RFID touch and go or smart tag at toll gates. And this was decided by the cabinet in a meeting yesterday. And they agreed that the choice must be there, just like how it was practiced when touch and go was first introduced in its early years. Cash payments were allowed to continue to make the process easier. And I assume from there that we will be working forwards, right, into trying to transition in a more gradual way towards eventually going full RFID. There is also, of course, other questions about, you know, in general, when we look at our highways and tolls, what would we like to see change? Because I guess, you know, in a time of transition, now is the time also to be asking what other innovations we could be looking for. And our neighbours, Singapore, tend to come up a lot in this context, especially with their ERP, electronic road pricing. If you've driven around the island, then you'll know, that essentially there are no toll booths. Instead, cash gets deducted from a cash card and that is detected by gantries. And they work on a pricing system. So weekdays and weekend prices aren't the same. And essentially, there is none of this worry about reversing and, you know, getting caught and so on. So yeah, I mean, we thought today would be as good a time as any to get into the situation with our tolls. So first, we're going to be looking at what's the deal with our toll system? Is it currently serving us? What would we like to see improved? And then in the second half of our show, we're going to be looking at long distance travel, because that's also what we use our highways for, right? And whether we could be looking at different options, different public transport options, for instance. So let us know, how would you like to see our tolls improve? That number to call is 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be speaking with Anthony Lim, senior editor of Paul Tan. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Beyond frivolous matters, BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:12. You're listening to Inside Story with Lynn. Today we are looking at our tolls and our highways after a lot of confusion and jams happening earlier this week, especially as we transition towards going to the RFID. The cabinet has said that we can pick and choose, or rather that there should be choice given in the time being. But we'd like to hear from you. How would you like to see our tolls improve? That number to call, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us today to talk about this is Anthony Lim, senior editor of PaulTan.org. Anthony, thanks for joining us. So, our toll systems have gone through a few changes over the years. Can you tell us about how it's evolved and what it's like now?
Electronic toll collection isn't new. I mean, it really has been around since 1995, I think. But there have been many systems. So what happened at the beginning was that it started with microwave-based technology. A prime example of this is the one that was operated by Kersas, LDP, and Sprint. And this was, I think, in the early 2000s. I believe it was called Express Tag. And there's also Touch and Go, which came at around the same time, I think slightly later, or I think Smart Tag came a bit later. But the key point was that at some point in the early 2000s, there were basically competing systems. And obviously that was a little bit of a problem because you would have to have different transponders, different payment methods, you know, to get through, say, toll A, toll B, toll C. And sometime then, the government decided that it would do well to consolidate towards a single national standard. And that was when Touch and Go and Smart Tag was chosen. And I think it is, again, 2004 that they started operating that as a single unified system. So it's been with us for nearly two decades. And now, of course, there's RFID, which supposedly paves the way for multi-lane free flow toll collection down the line. So that's where we stand. We've had the electronic toll collection for a while, and it's worked as that.
So worked, yes, but how well has the current system worked for us, and what are some of the gaps?
Well, I think it's worked pretty well. I mean, given that you've got a system that people are used to, where they roll up to a toll booth, they now make, it used to be with paid by cash, right? And you had that option. So now that it's cashless, then you have to use a single system, which is basically Touch and Go cards. And you also have Smart Tag that operates on that extension of that. And of course, then there's RFID, which also links to the wallet. But the system itself has been, I won't say proven, but it's worked well enough, because if you look at all the highways and all the roads, even in KL, everybody seems to be used to it. So is it ideal? It's probably not 100% ideal, and we'll get to that later. But has it worked well enough? It has worked well enough for what it is. And given the considerations of our country and, you know, the whole way it's run.
So on a whole, how would you describe the experience of using tolls in Malaysia as a driver?
I think most people tend to think that we pay too much for tolls. Every road is a toll, you know, so that's inescapable, but that also allows you to get to places faster. How has it been as a driver? I think by and large, it is relatively smooth. It is inescapable that there are some roads or, you know, places where traffic is very much higher and you can't do anything about it. So whether or not you have a tolled system or not, even if there's no toll, those roads would probably be very congested. They do provide an alternative sometimes to untolled roads, you know, but does it make life faster or easier in those cases? Probably not. But by and large, I think it has worked well enough for most drivers, because if you look at the North-South Expressway, that's a very good case in point. Previously, before the highway was available, people who needed to travel to, say, Ipoh or Penang would have to take trunk roads, and that took a longer time. So having those things, the convenience of a tolled road, expressway, has made life easier for a lot of people. I think that just people tend to complain a bit too much about maybe the rates, and that's something that can't be changed, actually.
So the government, of course, recently rolled out RFID for private light vehicles on the North-South Expressway. We've been talking about this earlier in the week. There were so many complaints. What did you make of this incident and the rollout overall?
I think it was poorly planned. I think that the anticipation was that it would progress smoothly because that people would use RFID or make that switch didn't really come through. So what happened was that it was fine, I think, in places where you could still have a lot of touch and go, because that forms the primary basis for most, you know, toll payments. Not having smart tag obviously threw a bit of a spanner in the works, because people were suddenly caught without it. Of course, you could then use the same cards in a touch and go lane, but the confusion was probably quite supreme at that point. It could have been done a little bit better, to in the sense that if you have a toll plaza that say maybe has three toll booths, then you could have perhaps, you know, one, which is if you want to have the RFID, you can have the RFID lane. But the second lane has to be probably a smart tag lane and maybe one touch and go lane. Now, people are going to complain about it because the touch and go guy is going to sit down and say, we've got two lanes before, now we've got one. The smart tag guy is still going to use his lane, and the RFID lane is there. It's the third lane. Now, if you hybridize the smart tag and touch and go lane into one, the smart tag guy is going to say, well, you know, I'm sitting behind all these cars who are having to use touch and go. I have to share my lane with them. There's no ideal situation, but at least having that option to use smart tag was a necessity. And that's something that they should have thought of at that point. Could it have been done better? I think, yeah, for sure.
And, you know, yesterday the Prime Minister said that drivers have to be given the option now between RFID, touch and go, and smart tag at these toll gates. Would continuing to give users this many options be effective in the long run?
Malaysians are, I think our people are creatures of habit. They tend to go back to things that they are familiar with. And in this case, it is not wrong to say that they would probably fall back onto things that they are already having, which is in this case, touch and go and smart tag. Primarily because of the entry cost towards RFID. Now, in order to make a new technology work, you need to basically get people using it. And if you're going to charge people money for the installation of it, in this case, I think it is 25 if you do it yourself, and 35 if you do it in fitment centers. Now, that's extra cost. People are going to look and say, I've got my touch and go card, right? It's very easy for me to go out, top up anywhere. There's no extra cost except for what I pay for toll. If I have a smart tag, it's just slotting it in and doing the same thing. Now I have to basically use money to buy a strip, an RFID tag to put in there, ally it back to my wallet, and I have to have a bank account inside. So I think there are a lot of things where if you give people a choice, they will go back to what is familiar and easiest to use. Will it change anytime soon? Probably not. So how fast can these guys make it happen? I don't know. But maybe one of the things that could happen is that they could make RFID tags, say, either free or at a very minimal cost, you know. And that would probably encourage people to do things, or at least get it, try it out, you know.
So in this area, right, the comparison that often comes up is Singapore with their congestion pricing system, the ERP. How can we head towards a system that is on par with that?
Now, I think the ERP, the road pricing system in Singapore works for them because it's a relatively small place and everything can be controlled. Australia also uses, a free flow electronic toll payment system. I think the e-tag. And to be on par, I believe, would take a lot of time and education. I think the biggest issue would be enforcement. You might find that many, you know, I mean, given how Malaysians work, that will try to game the system. If you don't have, you know, boom gates, you don't have a toll plaza that has something that stops you and makes you pay, then people are just going to try, you know, to beat the system. Now, something like the multi-lane free flow, which is what's happening in Singapore without the gates, so to speak, will encourage a lot of violations. And that's the biggest challenge, which is people not paying. Now, how will the service provider and toll operator work around this? I don't know. I suppose we'll get to, when we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But yeah, that is the biggest challenge for them. The other thing is also migration will involve cost. Now, again, the question is that if it moves to MLFF, it will require money to be spent on the infrastructure. That's one side of it. Now, how will the public have to work around this? Will they have to pay again for a new system, a new transponder when the time comes, or will the RFID tag be suitable enough for use then? So these are questions that need to be addressed.
And what challenges are there for us in this area of improvement?
I think, again, it is about basically people. People are sort of getting used to the fact that they have to pay tolls. They're not happy with it. No one is always happy when they have to pay for something. But they get use of the roads. I think the challenges will basically be trying to get people to just say, have a system that is easiest for everyone in terms of, they would have to pay. It's just a case of saying, making it easier for them to pay and with the least hassle. How will that work? Again, remains to be seen, because you've seen how they've done it with RFID. And that system is also, again, it's not a bad system it by and large. Like every system, it has its own issues and kinks, but there are always going to be challenges. So any system that they put in will have its own. The fastest way would probably be the MLFF, which is basically free flow, right? But then people are now going to stick things on their car. They're trying to game the system. How would a toll operator and service provider work around that? I don't know. I can't answer that question. I don't know how they're going to do it. So those are the biggest challenges for everyone, actually, including the people who are just sitting down here and waiting to see what happens next.
So in closing then, what are your hopes for the improvement of our road systems and highways?
I guess we have enough highways. We have enough good highways. If you look at how things are happening in the Klang Valley, there seems to be more highways coming up and they're building more. The road system is quite good. Can it cope with all the traffic in the Klang Valley? There are times when it doesn't do very well. But that's to be expected, because you've just got everybody driving cars around. But by and large, the highways themselves, the expressways, the north-south expressway works very well. If you look at how it is, you can drive. In fact, I just drove back from Penang yesterday, and it took me about 4.5 hours, and the roads were smooth. I mean, it's by and large, if you drive on a time where there's no festive season, there's nothing, no public holidays, it is quite smooth. The infrastructure works, and you get enough rest stops. You need, places to stop. The roads themselves are in good condition. So yeah, we can't complain about that. In the Klang Valley, obviously, with all these new highways, yeah, it's going to be it's intrusive to some, but it will help many. So I don't know how that will work out, whether we'll get more roads. There will always be more roads. Will people be happy? I don't know. They should.
Anthony. Thanks for speaking with us today. That was Anthony Lim, senior editor of PaulTan.org, talking to us about our tolls and highways and essentially the room for improvement that exists, some things that we can consider. We've been asking you, how would you like to see our tolls improve? You can call us, WhatsApp us, tweet us, and we have a lot of messages. I'm not surprised to see Singapore coming up a lot. I just wanted to say that because we have, for example, Alt saying, make a study trip to Singapore, copy from there, paste in Malaysia, no need to try other systems that do not work. Meanwhile, we have Anthony who says, I got stuck in reverse several times using RFID. After the few times having that experience, I stopped using it. It has caused more inconvenience, frustration, and having to reverse. And even if you do that, it still doesn't necessarily activate it. And then there are several other cars behind you that make that reversing slow and difficult. You don't have to wait for one, but several to reverse at the same time. This can also be a danger as we have to stop suddenly if other cars jam on their brakes right behind us. We need to advance. So why can't they just adopt, and here it is, the ERP system, like what they've been using in Singapore? It should be a smooth drive-through without even having to slow down. I will just say that ERP comes up a heck of a lot more, but keep those thoughts coming. How would you like to see our tolls improve? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Bole for Malaysia. Ha. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:37. You're listening to Inside Story with Lynn. And today we are talking about our tolls and our highways, specifically because of the difficulties really experienced by road users at the North-South Expressway earlier this week. And with the RFID rollout starting and then kind of stopping, we just wanted to know what your thoughts were and also what we can do to improve the system that we currently have. You can keep those thoughts coming. We have a lot of messages. And we are about to, I will just say, get into this larger issue of cross-country travel or longer distance travel and what we could look to. But for now, we have messages, including this from Jason, who says, well, poor implementation. You should have made it a law. All new cars to be fitted with RFID. All books to be gradually removed. Cars auto-charged as they pass, like the ERP. Those who owe or don't pay, you can't renew their license, road tax, etc. All boom gates to be gradually removed. That was a clarification there. I think, you know, that's one way to look at it, especially considering that the cabinet at the moment is actually going in the other way, which is to say there will be more options. It's not going to be mandatory. And I think, you know, regardless, right, there are pros and cons on either side. I also think that with something like this, that point about gradual removal is very important, because if you want to make it mandatory, as we're talking about, the other part of it is that you really have to do it gradually and give people a chance to actually adopt it. Meanwhile, we have this from Mohammed who says, too many options, people get confused. I prefer compulsory RFID. So, you know, in line with what we heard earlier, just drive through like the Singapore ERP, no need for congestion. Without an RFID fitment on the car, you can't renew road tax, make it compulsory, people will follow. John, on the other hand, is going in a completely different direction and saying the best way to fix the toll issue, scrap them altogether, get rid of cronyism, use road tax to pay for road development and maintenance. That is a fun one, and I think opens up an entirely separate conversation about what our toll collection monies are actually used for. And before we close off for now, we have Lydia, who's bringing in a number of different things, saying that the congestion is not only caused by the incompetency of our tolls. Firstly, almost half of the nation have been working from home for the past 2 years. There are multiple road closures, which should already have been completed a year ago. The authorities should really look on how this is impacting traffic flow. Secondly, there's poor planning of toll lanes for the various forms of payment. People who usually opt for RFID aim for speed and efficiency, but there's no consistency and clear way of finding for different toll system payments at different routes. Some RFID lanes are tucked all the way to the left, some are in the middle, some are at the right. Thirdly, as a user of RFID for 2 years, it cannot be shared with smart tags. Different frequency capture, different speed. Most of the time, people have to reverse because those with no balance have somehow stolen the car behind's payment and then it's stuck there. So my advice would be to keep a distance. And finally, RFID was free 2 years ago with an installer at several malls to activate the system and to make sure it worked. We need this assistance again. Lydia, several really important points there. Keep them coming, though. Basically, how would you like to see our toll systems and highways improved? That number to call, 7733-2900. WhatsApp, 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, though, we wanted to look at this other issue of longer distance travel in our country. So not just urban centres, right? Not just getting to our workplace, but instead interstate and our reliance on highways for that, whether that's the way forward. And for that, we're crossing over now to Professor Dr. Ahmad Farhan Mohamed Sadullah, Professor of Transport Engineering at University Science Malaysia. Prof. Farhan, as always, welcome to the show.
Hi, Lynn. How are you? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. So, firstly, what can you tell us about options for longer distance travel in Malaysia right now, right? What do we have available?
Okay. First of all, before I answer that, I think we have to acknowledge that long distance travel in Malaysia has risen over the years. I think that's very important. It is a chicken and egg situation. When we have the highway systems, people feel that they can have access and therefore adjust their traveling to include long distance travel for leisure, for business, and so on. So in a way, for goods and people, we have seen a marked increase in traveling throughout the country. And the options are quite similar, okay, except perhaps the rail is a new option that has excited many of us. The rail, especially on the West Coast, has given an additional option. But anyway, in Malaysia, we have the private vehicles and the public transport being used for both for our long-distance travel. So private vehicle, definitely we use our own automobile or cars, but there are also people who use motorcycles for long-distance travel, as ironically, we are one of the few countries in the world that allows motorcycle on an expressway. So that's why we see them flying through the expressway, doing whatever they want, traveling, having fun, and making risks on the road as well. In terms of public transport, of course, we have our flight, our rail, our bus, and we do also have taxis that do go from city to city. But something that has gone, I think, is the kereta sewa. You know, if you were in the era of the Puduraya, you know, they will look for, they will call, you know, who wants to go to Muar, 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 and they get four people or five people, they move. Okay, that has sort of gone. Okay, shared kereta sewa. It used to be a license under the LPKP Act. And I think under the SPAD Act, it was slowly decommissioned. So basically, I think we still have many options to go from one city to another, but perhaps people are looking into convenience, safety, comfort, and I think that has changed the sort of the profile of what is on offer. Yep.
So, by the sounds of it, then, we are still pretty heavily reliant on highways, right, when it comes to traveling long distance.
Yeah, very. We are now reliant on highway not only for people, but also for goods. And that has actually, made our highways approaching or exceeding capacity. And I think nowadays, even weekends, normal weekends with no school holidays or any public holidays, we are seeing and we are feeling that pressure on the highways, which is also not good because highways is supposed to be a premium way of travel because we are paying the toll. So what is the difference between the normal road and the highway road? So, but it all, the key is because we have reached our capacity and we have not had an alternative plan for that. I think that's where we have erred. We have been over-reliant on cars and we did not realize that the demand has increased for both cars and goods. And the goods, the good vehicles are also giving their own share of the problem with overloading, with dangerous driving. And also when they overload, they are underperforming. So their vehicles are slower, especially when climbing. So this all adds to the traffic flow situation, making things more congested than they should. So these are all things that Unfortunately, the advantage that Malaysia had with our excellent expressway system back in the last century, we sort of were complacent with it. And at the end of the day, I think we spent too much time, too much effort on urban highways, which we have a lot. You can see in Klang Valley, I cannot keep track of the highways in Klang Valley anymore. But not so true in other cities. So I think this is another discussion that we can also discuss, because intercity travel requires seamlessness, and you want it to be free flow not only intercity but as you enter cities. So we have to look at in totality, and sometimes we are over focusing on Klang Valley and forgetting the rest of the country.
So if we think about, and I always ask you this when you come on, because we are so far from ideal. So I have to say, if we think about the ideal, is there such a thing as what a good transport mix could look like, right? What should we be aiming for?
Yeah, a good transport mix is upholding sustainable transport, and therefore it should allow accessibility to all, regardless of whether they have a car or regardless whether they have their own private transport. I think that is key. If we are able to achieve that, then we can assure that inclusivity for travel has been attained for the country. And that is part of the sustainable development goal. And we are nowhere near there. I mean, any rural area, if we don't have a car, if we don't have a motorcycle, we will not be able to move. So I think that is still an aim that is still far from being achieved. But in terms of a good split, I would always go for a transport system that can bring more people per direction per hour. You know, that is more sustainable, more effective, more efficient. And this is why public transport such as the rail should be supported, because for urban as well as for intercity, they can, the potential of bringing so many people per direction per hour is just almost limitless. And you can see how China now is prospering because they have invested in such, and Japan and many other countries in Europe has done that. And you can see that, people are able to move wherever they are without having their own private transport. And I think this should be our aim. But of course, we have also had discussion about the business model, whether it's the right business model, whether we are getting the right system for the right link. These are all questions that need to be answered. And it is always about demand and supply equilibrium. So there's no one straight answer, Lynn, for that. But it's always about trying to allow people to move to wherever they want, regardless of whether they have their own car, and they can do it in their own convenience, safety, comfort. And at the end of the day, just imagine Japan, just imagine Europe. You know, that's what Malaysia should be already. Okay, but we are unfortunately nowhere near there.
We're speaking today with Professor Dr. Ahmad Farhan Mohamad Sadullah, Professor of Transport Engineering at University Science Malaysia, talking about options for longer distance travel and transportation here in our country. After this, we're going to continue the conversation. And in the meantime, keep your thoughts coming as well, and keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Business, finance and music, BFM 89.9.
It is 6:51. You're listening to Inside Story with Lynn. And now we're continuing our conversation on longer distance travel, because we've been talking about highways, right? So our guest is Professor Dr. Ahmad Farhan Mohamad Sadullah, Professor of Transport Engineering at University Science Malaysia. Prof, you mentioned earlier this preference in some ways for trains, for buses, for people moving. How good is the connectivity of our cross-country buses and trains?
At the moment, the problem is still about the last mile option. I think we can plan, and there are enough market-driven supply side. We have planned our rail, at least on the West Coast, quite you know, sufficiently. We have the tracks now, and we hope for the double tracking as well for the south section. But the fun stops when we get to our station. Okay, so I think that's a problem. In Klang Valley, if we start our journey, it is not bad. Okay, the network is good. It was my dream back in the last century when I finished my PhD. I said, when can I have a network of such for public transport in Klang Valley? Now we have, okay? But it is not the same at the other end. So I think this is a big issue that we have to address if we were to be serious about long-distance travel and making it seamless for all. We need to ensure the last-mile option. And it's actually simple, you know? I think we have good stations. They are adequate. But what happens after we leave the station is the problem. And I think we still have not sorted it out. Even, for example, the ETS system to the north has been around for what? Almost 6, 7, 8 years now. We still have not addressed the last mile option by making sure that there are, you know, nearby buses or park and rail. I mean, parking are just horrendous in some stations. And I think to make sure that there is a service. Okay, I think this is where we do not follow many of the countries who are supporting public transport use. I remember going to a remote area in Sweden one day, and I arrived quite late, and I was anxious because it is like a very remote hotel, the only hotel in the area. And when I reached the station, it was like 4 of us or 5 of us who just disembarked. But then I have the facility. There was a phone call. There was a possible way for me to connect to the local taxi. But this is not in our country, you know. So the last mile option need not be standardized. It can be customized to the local context and so on. And this is also business to people, but there are no coordination, I think. So I think that is our problem, you know. So connectivity is door to door. So we must ensure that the last mile option is being addressed at both ends. And I think with that, and of course, the frequency and the operation level of our public transport system can be managed better. And people will see that this is a good option for them to travel. I would not mind going, you know, but I will always consider, you know, if I don't have anybody to pick me up from my end, which is the more kampung end, the remote end of Nibong Tebal in Pulau Pinang, I will think twice and therefore I will drive, you know? So this is the normal consideration that people will have to make when they don't have anybody that can, you know, that can give them the service of bringing and sending them to the station. So to me, it's still about that. And we can do that quite easily, practically, and cheap. You know, that's why I feel rather than spending too much on the infrastructure, like the high-speed rail, I think I've spoken about this before, I would rather spend, you know, a fraction of the money to upgrade all these facilities at all stations, and that will really bring our last-mile travel to where it should be.
So, Prof, we only have a couple of minutes left with you. I wanted to close on, you know, what, as you say, right, it could be cheap, it could be simple. So what's standing in our way? What do we need to do?
I was hoping that you asked that question because you gave me several questions. To me, it's about public transport planning, okay? It's the governance. Who is in charge? Okay, I'm going to be a bit controversial now. Post-SPAD. Have we heard anything about what's going on? I think this is something that we can discuss further. I was the commissioner of SPAD and we had a lot of plans. And unfortunately, the SPAD form disintegrated into different sections of MOT. And I'm not sure until today who is doing the planning. You know, so without planning, all these are just talk and discussion, you know. But as you know, the policy, we have a policy, the 2019-2030 policy that was launched by the Harapan government, which I was told is still being used. But I do not see how that policy is being converted into planning. And I do not know who does the planning. So if we do not do the planning and make sure that it is on the ground, it is going to be project driven. You know, sometimes when it's project driven, we don't see the big picture and the whole picture, and we will miss things that are considered small and petty, but are critical to ensure seamlessness in travel. So I think that's number one. If nobody asks actually what is my wish for this year, usually somebody will ask my wish for transport, but nobody asked this year. So, but my wish for 2022 is for perhaps MOT and APAD to relook at the gaps that exist post SPAD. Okay, I think we have to learn, and we have to decisions have been made, but we need to move forward. And I think for public transport is something that you have to do fast, because the results are many years down the road, you know. And I think we can do a lot if we sit down and if we discuss properly. Do another NKRA. I mean, I'm just using an NKRA example. You know, we have KL and Klang Valley transport system because of the NKRA in 2009. We can give it a different name, but we need to get experts around, professionals around, and start going. So that would be my dream. And I think that is the biggest obstacle that we have been facing since 2018, 2019, after SPAD was closed.
Prof, thank you so much for joining and for sharing your 2022 wish.
Okay, yeah. For once, I speak without being asked. Thank you, Lynn, for having me again. I hope to see you again and have good discussion. Happy travel and safe travel to all. Thank you.
You too. That was Professor Dr. Ahmad Farhan Mohamad Sadullah, Professor of Transport Engineering at University Science Malaysia, taking us through basically the challenges involved when it comes to longer distance transportation and what we need to consider. You've been listening to Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.